Hey, this meeting is being recorded and we're here. It's May 14th. It's our virtual office hour using Zoom. And we're going to be working through the worksheet for the pre-final exam. So we'll be doing, this should look very familiar, especially if you were relatively sober, remotely sober, relatively aware of your general surroundings when you took exam number four, because it's going to be very similar to that, those calculations. So we're going to share the screen and oops, let's turn on the only the host can share the screen so we don't get bombarded. Okay, so let's make sure we're in the right browser. This is the right browser. Okay, so we go to the class website and I'm logged in using another Gmail account, so we don't have we will not have edit privileges, and most of you already know how to deal with that, but we'll review it again. So we're going to go through the pre-final worksheet, and we'll have also the answer key to check our answers. But first, let us get a few of the worksheets we need. I mean the tables, the present value tables. So let's go down to chapter 6, and let's put the present value tables on the screen over here on the next page. Chapter 6 present value tables. And then let's go down to chapter 10 for the bonds and get the present value tables for chapter 10 for the bonds. So here are the two present value tables for the bonds. All right, so we have those. And I'm not going to put the formulas. Do you want the formulas on the screen? Anybody want the formulas on the screen? We'll just review. Maybe we'll grab them, we'll see, or maybe I'll just type them in as we go along. So let us now go to the pre-final worksheet, and you will see, that you do not have edit rights. You only have view, and you can request edit access, but don't do it, because I'll just send you back an email saying, no, you can't have edit access, make your own copy. So you can do file, download as weird or word or worst or whatever you want to call it, or use Google Docs and make a copy. So I'm going to call it the incredibly demonstrative name of copy of pre-final evaluations and put it in my drive, but you'll put it in probably in a folder, you decide. Okay, so now we will have the edit. I'm going to close the old one because we don't need that one. We now have edit access. We now have all the access that anybody who is creating their own document. And so these are the sample valuation and yield calculations that we will see on the pre-final, that it'll be very similar on the final. So here, Kellogg's, you ever hear of them? Cornflakes? They're selling for around 64. Well, actually, let's go see what they're selling for now. This, you know, it's so volatile. I don't know if you guys noticed this morning, but when we started, the market was down 1% or so. And then by later in the day, 1 o'clock our time, you know, it was back up. It was so insane. It's just, there's all these computers and programming algorithms fighting one another, and then people panicking and not panicking and thinking, oh my goodness, it's going up, buy. Oh my goodness, it's going down, sell. Let's take a look at Kellogg's. 63. So it hasn't really changed that much over the last couple of weeks. 63.5. It's paid $2.28 in dividends, 3.55% dividend yield. PE ratio is still pretty high at 21. And the last year, so there, look at that, $2.99 in earnings and $2.28 in dividends. So the dividend payout ratio is pretty high, which is what you'd expect from a food company. It's not like they have to redevelop cornflakes. They've already got the formula they've had for over 100 years. Okay, so we see that they're selling for about $64 and paying $2.28 in dividends. Now, here's the key. They have been growing their dividends at a rate of approximately 4%. And how did we figure that out? Well, we used the value line. We showed today how we can use Yahoo to look at the dividend growth rate, the dividends. So you Or you just look it up. You look up at that value line, and they'll tell you what they've been doing. If we require an 8% return on investment, how much would we be willing to pay for Kellogg's? So whenever you see that dividends have been growing at a constant rate of whatever, what do we use? The constant perpetual growth model. Perpetual growth model. And what is that equal to? Well, let's give ourselves a little room here. That's equal to the annual dividends times 1 plus the dividend growth rate. Let's see if it fixes it for me. I would give it a chance. Dividend. You know, I'll just press. I think I use the mouse here. Dividend growth rate. And then we divide that by our required rate of return. Minus the dividend growth rate. Very simple formula, just plug in the numbers, but very powerful. So $2.28 times 1 plus 4%, and everybody should percent. Everybody should understand that is 1.04. By now, we've done it enough times. Now, Tiffany, does that make sense to you? Because Tiffany, I don't know if she's not there yet. She just started the class a couple weeks ago. Do you see how we go from, I'll do it again over here, 1 plus 4% equal to 1.04. Make sense to Tiffany? Let's see. I think she's chatting on me here. So we can look at the chat. No, I see. I can't
she
see
said yeah, yeah.
She said yes. Okay, thanks. Okay. Okay, great. So now, and then we're expecting 8% or 0.08, and we see that the dividend growth rate is 0.04. So now I got my trusty little calculator here. Come here, calculator. $2.28 times 1.04, and you get 2.3712. Okay. And then this, I can do this in my head, 0.04. And so 2.3712 divided by 0.04 is saying that we believe that Kellogg's is worth about $59.28. So the model is saying that if we desire an 8% rate of return, and if they continue to grow their dividends at 4%, that it really is worth only $59, but it's selling for $64. So we'd have to decide, obviously this is just blowing smoke. Maybe if we just reduced our rate of return, I mean, it's a food company. What do you expect? You know, it's not growing at a huge rate. So if we just change this to 7%, what would happen? And or maybe we say, no, let's go take a look at other food companies. Let's see if we can find better bargains. But before we make a decision to sell or not to sell, buy or not to buy, we throw away all this information and say, do I really want to own Kellogg's? You know, one of the largest food companies in the United States, been around for over 100 years. Is that somebody I want to partner with? Cool. And let's take a look now. Let's go to the answer key and make sure we got it right. Okay, open the answer key, Piano. And yeah, and that's exactly what I got. There's the view. Zoom. 59. Not too exciting, but remember, often in investing, boring is good. Okay, so questions, thoughts, ideas? Where's that darn chat? Where's Alt-H? Doesn't show up. Oh, well. See, that's the thing. I wish I could see the chat while I was doing this, but I can't. Tiffany, did we lose you on that? Because she hasn't gotten to Chapter 6 yet. Did she say something to somebody else?
She says it makes sense to her.
Oh, good. Thank you. And who is this? Who's this?
Luis Marchand.
Luis Marchand. Marquez or Marchand?
Marchand.
Marchan. Okay, Luis, welcome, welcome. Thank you. Okay, so that was the constant perpetual growth model. Now we're going to do my favorite discounted cash flow model. Ta-da. Let's assume we're going to just make it easy. We start on the beginning of the year. It's January 1st, 2020, in Wells Fargo, which has been a major disappointment for our class. Maybe it's now time to look at it in detail. Is currently selling for $26. Well, I think it's even fallen even further, hasn't it? Let's see what it's selling for now. WFC, $24. So it hasn't gone down that much, but still banks are getting hammered because we're going into a recession. Its dividends for 2020 are expected to be $2.04. So let's see what Yahoo says. Did they change that? No, it's still $2.04. Look at that, 9%. That's how far they dropped. That's how far the stock has dropped. The stock was just a few months ago, right, up around $48, $52 in November, December. In February, it's now to 47. Now it's down to 24. You know, if you're in it for the long term, it's a good idea to take a look at these banks. Don't look at just Wells Fargo, though. Don't look at the banks. Don't look at just one bank. Look at all the banks. But let's say that we look at their dividend growth rate, and it looks like they've been raising their dividends, you know, pretty well. But we're going to say, you know what? We expect the dividends in next year to go down. We expect the dividends to go down in 2021. So I'm just doing this myself. I'm just not saying what if I look at Value Line, which I haven't seen Value Line for Wells Fargo because the bank, the libraries are still closed. But let's say they think they're going to go up, but we're saying no. We're going to make a prediction that next year Wells Fargo is going to have to drop their dividend by 20 cents or so. And then back in 2022, we think they're going to raise it back up because by 2 years, I'm thinking 2 years. I mean, it might be longer. It might be a whole lot shorter. Let's pray it's a whole lot shorter. This turmoil is going to be gone because we're going to have a treatment and a vaccine, and we're going to reopen the economy, and let's rah, rah, rah. Hopefully it happens, but it might not. Mother Nature bats last. Okay, so let's say that's what we expect. This is what we're expecting. We understand. We know that this is just, you know, just blowing smoke. But that's what we're going to say. And we're thinking by the end of 2022, we expect the price to be $38. And we looked at Value Line. They were more, maybe they're more optimistic. Maybe they were pessimistic. But let's say we think it's going to be worth $38. And our required rate of return is 9%. So using the discounted cash flow stock valuation model, calculate the present value of the future cash flows, from this stock. Should we consider buying the stock? Now, if you've seen this before, you know that I like to use a table. So I'm going to insert a table, and we want to have four columns and five rows. Okay, and we'll neaten the table up a little bit there. This will be the years. These will be the future cash flows. Here's our present value multipliers that we get from the table at 9%. And let's use... I like to format this with a subscript, not that it matters. Okay. And then these are the discounted cash flows. So hopefully this is looking familiar to most all you. Now, don't freak out, Tiffany. You're going to learn how to do this in chapter 6. So now let's make everything centered. Okay. So 2020. 2021, 2022. So in our future, we expect 2020 to be $2.04. So let's put down $2.04. We don't really need a dollar sign. I'll put it in there. And then 2021, we think $1.88. And then in 2022, we think they're going to raise it back up to $2.04. Plus, we expect the stock price to be $38. Where did we get that information? Again, I bet you that if you looked at the value line, it would not be the same. They're probably more optimistic about what Wells Fargo's price is going to be in 3 or 4 years, but maybe not. Who knows? They might think, you know, again, the big unknown is what's going to happen with the coronavirus. All right. That's the big unknown. So this is $40.04. Is that right? I get that right? Yeah. $38 plus $2.04. So $40.04. So now the multipliers, what's our required rate of return? 9%. We go to the present value table for chapter 6, go across to 9%. Let's see if we can remember these three numbers. I won't. 0.917, 0.842, and 0.772. So let's see. Let's copy the 772. So 917 and 842. Okay. 0.917, 0.842, and then I'm going to... Because usually I can't remember three numbers and I cheat by grabbing one. So let's see. Oops, wrong one. There's the one. 917-842-772. Cool. Well done. All right. So now what do? We multiply each one through, and some of you probably already done this, but I'll do it on my own. 2.04 times 0.917. So $1.87068. There's supposed to be a period, not a comma. We're not in Europe. Actually, most of the rest, the rest of the world uses commas and periods opposite of what we do. $1.88 times 0.842, and that's $1.58, $2.96. And then $40.04 times 0.772 is $30.87.84. So we sum those three up, plus $1.296 plus $1.87.068, and the model is saying that the stock is worth about $34.32448, or approximately $32.32. Okay, did anybody else get something different? Did I make any mistakes there? Let's go look at the, where's the answer key? What did I do with the answer key? Over here, right? Answer key. 3436. Is that what did I get? 3432. Okay, so let's do this again. Okay. Doesn't matter. We're close enough. 0.4 times 0.772. Oh, yeah, I did something wrong here. This is wrong. 91. 88. Okay, that was the problem. So check this over again. 40.04 times 0.772. Okay, now I got it right. Plus 1.58296 plus 1.87068. And the model, I'm sorry, is 34. Close enough. 30. Remember, we're just blowing smoke here. 452. And then, so 3436. Is that right? 3436. Let's make sure that, let me look at my answer key again. 3436. So the model is saying, hey, if Wells Fargo does what we think it's going to do, now there's an argument to be made that you don't know what they're going to do. They could literally stop paying dividends, and we would all be in deep kimchi, and the price would even fall even further. But that's, you know, that's part of the risk we take when we invest in stocks. Questions, thoughts, ideas, comments? Let's stop the share for a second and go to the... So Tiffany says, yes, makes sense so far. Thanks, Louise. Louise is here. Okay, so cool. What do you think? Pretty cool. This is my favorite model. Of course, there are many others that we didn't even begin to look at. They're in the book, which is in the library. When the library is opened up, you can learn about others. There are other books and other, there are dozens of different models. The price models, which we've sort of forgotten about from chapter 6, which I think you should forget about. I'm not a big fan of those. But again, as we said in chapter 6, after we've done all these calculations, throw them all away and make sure you look at their competitors, do all the chapter 17, the financial ratio analysis, the price ratios, the liquidity ratios, the productivity ratios, the leverage ratios and all those, and then ask yourself, do I really want to own Wells Fargo? Give yourself the 15-second, 30-second, 90-second pep talk or elevator, whatever it's called, the elevator pitch about why you should own or not own Wells Fargo, one of the nation's largest banks, too big to fail, that the government won't let them fail, so it's not like they're going to go away. How do you know a bank is making money? Well, their doors are open. Except when people lose their jobs and can't make their payments anymore, then things get a little nasty. But the government, of course, will not let the banks fail. So hey, it's a good time to buy. Well, of course, we need to look at their competitors, JP Morgan, Bank of Armenia, who else? U.S. Bank. Come on, name the banks. I'm forgetting. Citibank. Citibank. Don't forget Citibank. Tiffany raised her hands. Okay, let's go back to the... to the stop. Okay, so let's see, what do you got there, Tiffany? She uses a chat. So what was the answer? Oh, the answer is, the numeric answer is 30. We believe the stock is selling for about 26 bucks. I think it was $24 down 24 now, $24. The stock is selling for $24. The model is telling us that we think it's worth $34. So the answer, so to speak, is that the model is pointing us towards this stock as something that we can get at least a 9% rate of return from our money. But the answer is also, don't believe the models. The models are only there to point us in the direction of stocks that have their roots deep in the economy, that have been around for a long time and should do well in good times and bad times. And as we say, and you're going to go through, when you go through chapter 5, you're going to see the different types of stocks. Banks are sometimes called income-oriented stocks, income stocks, or they're not defensive in that respect because they do get hit by they're not cyclical like cars, and they're not defensive like food companies. But they are more income oriented because they're very staid and boring, like utilities. They're very boring. In some way, they're like a food company, right? Everybody's got to go to the bank. Think about the poor folks who are trying to make a living legally selling marijuana, and they can't use a bank. Oh my God, what a mess it is for them. So the answer is, this is an attractive investment for us. We need to do a whole lot more research. We need to look at their competitors and then read everything we can, look at the value line, see what value line says, and any other people that you trust. I like the value line, and then make the decision whether to buy it or not buy it. And then once we own it, we do this again every few months or every 6 months and ask ourselves, is it still a good deal? Should we still hold on to it? Or maybe it's time to sell. We have another opportunity that we think is better. So in reality, so Tiffany, okay, so Tiffany, I'm sorry.
She's asking, how do we determine the percent rate of return?
Oh, well, if it happens, right? If 3 years down the road, the stock price is better or close to what we got, as you're not holding up everybody. No, don't worry. These are good questions. You know, how do you determine if you got the 9%? Well, in 3 years, well, hopefully you'll be looking at it, you know, every 6 months or every 3 months or so, and reading about, you'll be reading about Wells Fargo if you bought it. For example, say you put this in your portfolio. Every day you're going to look at the headlines and see what's going on, but you don't have to do the calculations every darn day. And so you will determine if you got the 9% rate of return, if it indeed does what, or anywhere close, because remember, we, if we did the internal rate of return calculation, we'd find, and assuming we get, you know, it is $38 in 3 years, we would, oh, is there an equation? Sure. Well, that's that. What you did, what I would suggest you'd use, yes, of course, you could do the original price. No, it's, what do you do is you take the new price minus the old price, and that's on the denominator, and divide that by the old price. That's one way of doing it. But the better way of doing it would be to use the spreadsheet, and we'll have time. We have time. Well, actually, we have already. Already 8 o'clock. Well, let's continue. The better way to do it would be to put this into the spreadsheet and use the internal rate of return, and it will tell you exactly what you get. It'll say, oh yeah, you actually got 12%, or you got 8%, or you got 17%, or whatever. Okay, so I answered your question. Good. Okay, let's go back. All right. So those were the folks. Those are the most important questions all semester long. This one guy here, because you can use this, as we saw today. Those of you who are here today. You can use this model for anything. But now, let's go to the bond model. Any questions about these guys anymore? Because let's go to the bond. So the bond, I know they're boring, but they're important. Annual interest divided by the market price, the bond yields. And remember, we like to see three digits of accuracy, like to see at least three digits of significant digits. So it's a 20-year bond, 10%. Remember, it's $100. Not, I shouldn't use 10% because some people put $10. And then when you do a 1% bond, some people put 100%. So I shouldn't really use, I hope I didn't do that in the exam. I don't remember. So the annual interest on a 10% bond is $100. Annual interest on a 5% bond, $50. Annual interest on a 3% bond, $30. So we take that annual interest and we divide it by the market price. It's currently selling for $1,200. So whoop, that's supposed to be a dollar sign. And what do we get? $100 divided by $1,200 divided by 1,200, and we get 0.0833333, or basically 8.33%. Cool. Now, this is where it gets a little scary, but really it's not that hard if you do it enough times, dear students. We take the annual interest, annual interest, and then we add to that the par value minus the market price divided by the number of years to maturity, num years. Okay, so let's make that bigger. Now, one thing we have to make sure, let's put parentheses around here just that we don't mess up. We have to do this whole thing first before we add the interest in the front. And some people, they would do this part right here. And then they'd add the interest and then do the division. No, it doesn't work that way. You can't do that. And then the bottom, we take the par value plus the market price divided by two, the average of the two. Now, you might be saying, oh, amazed, Piano remembers it from memory. Yeah, I've been doing this for a long time, right? But you got the formula sheet, so don't worry. You don't have to memorize it. So what's the annual interest on a 10% bond? $100. The par value is $1,000 minus the market price of $1,200. So that's going to be a negative 200. Everybody understand that that's a negative 200? You take 1,000 minus 1,200, and then you divide that by the number of years to maturity, or 20. So negative 200 divided by 20, oh, that's 10, negative 10. So, or negative 10 Let's put an or in there just to. Okay. So we take $100 plus a negative $10. Zing. And that's equal to $90. $90. And then we divide that. Now we got to go here and do the average of the two. So you take 1,000 plus 1,200 divided by 2, or 2,200 divided by 2, or 1,100. Is that right? That's got to be right. Yeah, it is. So, oops. Equals, so 90 divided by 1,100, and we get 0.08181881. Oh, no, we're going to get rid of that guy. Or basically 8.18%. So the current yield is 8.33%, but because we're only going to get $1,000 when we pay it $1,200 for the bond, we're only going to get $1,000 when the bond matures. So we're really only getting 8.18% if we hold on to the bond to maturity. All right, now do you want to do the yield to call real fast? Anybody not want to do it? How are we doing for time? Let's do it. Take about 5 minutes. Okay. So the yield to maturity and the yield to call are very similar. The only difference is we replace the par value with the call value in both the denominator and the numerator. Right? And instead of the number of years to maturity, we do years to call. So that's the only difference. Everything else is the same. We just change the par value in the numerator and the denominator to the call value, and we change the number of years to maturity to the number of years to call. So what's the call value? They have to pay us $1,025 to call the bond away. So these two 1,000s become 1025. And then the bond is not callable until 5 years from now. So the 20 becomes a 5. And that's the only difference. That's all. Everything else stays the same. So 1025 minus 1200 should be negative. What is that? 1025 minus 1200. Negative 175. Yeah, that's what I thought. Negative 175. When we divide that by 5, whoops, I got to hit the equal sign first. Divided by 5, we get a minus 35. Everybody with me there? Okay. So now, so we get $100 interest is still $100 interest out in the front. We're still getting that every year. And then we take $100 plus a negative $35. And that should be what, 65? Yeah, of course it is. Let's make sure. plus 100. Yeah, $65. And now, okay, 125 plus 1200 is $2,225. Divided by 2 is 1,112.50. So 1,112.50. So $65 divided by 1,112.50. Ah, if they call it away from us, poop. 584.26966. Or 5.84. Make sure you round correctly. We like 3 digits of accuracy. And look at the next digit. Yes, that should round down. So if they call it away from us, which is typical when you have a premium bond, it means that interest rates have fallen. The 10% bond, they're going to want to refinance that bond, just like a homeowner would want to refinance their home loan or a car. The car, a person bought a car loan at 12% or whatever, they're going to want to refinance for about 7% if they can. And the bond issuer is going to call the loan away from you. Okay. All right. So any questions on that guy?
So that means that we're going to receive, it's going to deal in 5 years from now to 5 years. That's the percentage it's going to yield.
Right. Okay. Assuming if they call it away from us, we're really only going to get 5.8584%.
In 5 years of having the bond.
5 years of having the bond, because we're getting the $100 annual interest, yes, but at the same time, what's happening is that we paid $1,200 for the bond, but it's going now down to $1,025. Well, it goes down to $1,000 if they don't call it, but that takes 20 years. So we had more years to take advantage of the $100 annual interest. Here we only get 5 years, and it makes its way down to $1,025, and which basically eats into our return. And so we get 5.85%, which is poopy, but that's it. That's the reality.
Okay.
Now, if it's a bond that's non-callable, then that whole calculation just gets thrown out the window because the bond issuer can't call it away from us. But if it is callable, then we have to be careful. Okay. So now number four is taxable equivalent yield. And notice that we've conveniently gotten rid of the double tax rate because that tends to drive people nuts. So we have an investor in the 35% tax bracket, which means they're doing all right, folks. 35% tax bracket means, you know, $400,000, $500,000. And what they're doing, they're looking at a muni bond that's paying 3% or a fully taxable corporate bond. And thank goodness for spelling checking. That's giving us 4.5%. And it did it. Okay, 4.5%. Now, just looking at the two, we'd say, ooh, the corporate bond's better, right? Well, not necessarily. The corporate bond is fully taxable. So do we ever do a calculation?
No.
No, never. Don't do any taxable equivalent calculations with corporate bonds or you get a SEPAPO. But for the federal tax exempt, which is what the IRS wants us to use, not tax-free, we take the muni bond yield. And again, I'm remembering this because I've been doing it enough times. If we were a little bit confused or just was still vague, go to the formula sheet and look it up. Divided by 1 minus the federal tax bracket. So in this case, the federal bond yield is 3% divided by 1.0 minus 0.35 or 35%. Everybody see that? The federal tax bracket is 35%, the highest tax bracket there is now. 1.0 divided minus 1.3, maybe I think there's like a 37 bracket for people making a whole lot more money. 1.0 minus 0.335. And so that's 0.03 divided by 0.65. So where's my calculator? I just had it here. 0.03 divided by 0.65 or 0.04615386. Did I got that right? 6153846. We like to see 3 digits of accuracy. So 4.62, be careful, right? 3 digits of accuracy. The next number is a 5 or greater. So then this one goes up by 1. If you don't remember how to round, contact me, because if you go out into the real world, don't know how to round, it's going to make all of us at Southwestern look bad, and we can't have that. No. Questions, thoughts? And again, on the final, we're not going to ask you to do the double tax exempt, the California tax-free bond. But you should know how to do that. It's not that, it's just more complicated, right? It's more tedious. All right. So let's, any questions before we go on? Because we've got 15 minutes. Cool. And we'll have time for questions afterwards. So now let's go to the last question. And here's where we're going to use we're going to do basically the discounted cash flow model, but this time for bonds. So we've got two to do, a $1,000 bond, always $1,000 in our class, 7%, $70, price 10-year, price to yield 9%. So what's happened? 7% bond, interest rates have gone up. What would we expect to happen to the price? Interest rates go up, prices go down. So we should expect to see this as a discount bond. Whereas the second one is a 9% bond for 10 years, but interest rates have gone down. So what should we expect to see the price? Should go, interest rates go down, bond prices go, everyone should say up. Up, okay, it's okay. They go up. If interest rates go down, bond prices go up. So hopefully you know that. So now, what's the bond valuation, the formula? This is basically the discounted cash flow model. It's the present value, I'll use PV and Miss Puerto Vallarta. Present value of the interest income plus the present value of the principal repayment. Okay, so equals. So what's the interest income? Well, it's a 7% bond, so everyone should say $70, and we're going to get that $70 for the next 10 years. Actually, you get $35 twice a year, but the bond valuation will be very, very similar. So which formula, which table do we use? We use the present value of a stream of payments because we're going to get the $70 for the next 10 years every year. So we could use this table on the right, but then we have to do 10 calculations. What a pain that is. So we don't want to do that. So we're going to, for the next 10 years, price it at 9%. So we go over to 9%. This is where people can get confused. They will use the 7%, no, 7% is the coupon yield. That's the nominal yield. That's what it's paying us. It's priced to yield 9%. So we go down to, there it is, 6.418. Everybody see that? It's a 10-year bond, price to yield 9%. So, I just forgot it. 6.418. So 6.418. Now, the principal repayment is a single payment of $1,000. Always in our class, $1,000. We don't, I know there's some bonds that are $5,000 and $10,000, but we'll just use $1,000 to make life easier. Okay? So that's a single payment. We're only going to get that once. So we use the table on the right, which is the present value of a lump sum principal. Again, we use the price to yield, not the coupon yield, not the nominal yield. So that's 4.22. Go across 9% down 10 years. So that's 0.422. So now equals $70 times six. Okay, let me get my calculator. $70 times 6.418 or $449.26. And then this you can, excuse me. This you can do in your head if you notice that, or just use the calculator. Because you just moved the decimal point 3 to the right. So, whoops. So, 449.26 plus 4.22, and this bond should be selling for somewhere close to $71.26. So, it is indeed a discount bond. Interest rates have gone up. You were getting paid 7%, but now new bonds are paying 9%. So you would be buying this bond at a discount, or you'd have to, if you wanted to sell it, you have to sell it at a discount. Questions, thoughts, ideas? Piece of cake? So now let's do the exact same thing, but this time for a bond where we bought it at 9%, but interest rates have fallen to 7%. we should expect a premium bond. And that's what we're going to see is going to happen. So what's the interest income on a 10-year bond? That's paying 9%. It's a 10-year bond, yes, maturity, but it's paying 9%, so that's $90. So now we go to the present value table for a series of payments, but we use the 7%. We go across 7%, 10 years, 7.024. That was the one we used in the example in the presentation. 7.024. That's why it's bolded, because it was in the presentation. And then the principal repayment. Again, we're going to get it in 10 years, but we're pricing it to yield 7%. So we go over to the lump sum table, go to 7%, down to 10 years, 508. Da, 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 da. So 90 times 7 point, okay, let's do that. 90 times 7.024, $632.16. And then over here, if we can do that in our head, it's $508. So 632.16 plus 508. And indeed, it is a premium bond. Interest rates have gone down. Our bond is now worth more. We could sell it at a premium, or we can hang on to it and continue to get $90 every year, $45 twice a year, until the bond matures in 10 years, in which case we get our $1,000 back. Cool. And that's it for the worksheet, dear students. That's it for the worksheet.
I have one question. I apologize.
You don't have to apologize. That's what you're here. We're here for the questions. I'm sorry. Don't apologize.
When I put in the 90 times the 7.024, I got $871.26.
Let me try this again. 90 times 7.024. Let's look at the worksheet. I'm getting $632.16. So let's take a look at the let's try it again. Maybe you got a bad calculator. Try 90 again times 7.024. 90 times 7 is about 630. Yeah, so you're not going to get 800. If you just look at 9, forget the 024. If you just do 90 times 7, you should get about $630. Let's try it again.
I forgot I had to press space to unmute, but yeah, I got it right.
That's okay. That's why we're here. We're here. The best thing to do is to make mistakes and then figure them out. So that is so if you study this guy, okay, there's Tiffany. Let's go to stop share. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Tiffany, got a question? This is going to be Greek to you, Tiffany, because you haven't even gotten to, can we go to four for a minute? Number four. Yeah. Okay, so back to number four. Okay, number four. Okay, number four. Yeah, you have to get the chapters 9 and 10 in bonds. When you buy a municipal bond, the feds cannot tax the states. The states cannot tax the feds. That's part of the Constitution. That's part that basically says, you know, you can't tax each other. So is this thing recording? Oh, poop. It looks like it's not recording. It's okay. Zoom is recording. I know Zoom is recording. I hope that Zoom is recording. let's make sure it is. Yeah. Okay. Cause my machine here, this thing messes up every once in a while, this little voice recorder. So what happens? You look at this muni bond and you see it's only paying 3%. Maybe
Tiffany asked the question if they should buy the we should buy the muni bond.
Well, the muni bond, all the things being equal, and they never are, the muni bond is a better deal from a yield standpoint. Now, maybe the muni bond, it doesn't have as good credit quality as the corporate bond. You know, maybe this is a corporate bond from a really, you know, really great company, and the muni bond is from some podunk school district somewhere in, you know, one of those places that starts with letter I, Iowa, Idaho, Iowatha, or whatever. And so you might say, nah, I'll take the corporate bond. But on a yield basis, the it's here. See, it says assuming both are high quality. Assuming both are high quality bonds, meaning you're not going to worry about default and all that that entails, having to get in line and wait to see what kind of, you know, return you're going to get when they pick the carcass clean. Assuming both are high quality, yes, you're right. We should go with the muni bond because that's going to pay us not a whole lot more. You know, this is 4.5% and this is 4.62%. Did I answer the question there?
So how do we know that it's a high quality?
Well, remember the bond agencies, the bond rating agencies are going to give it that silly triple A, double A, triple B, double B, B, triple C, double C, C, then D, meaning default. No F, it just goes down to D. So, and you know, I don't know how much I trust them. I don't know. Southwestern is double A minus, whatever that means, right? It means we're good. We're not going to default. But if all of a sudden the property values plummet and people stop making their property tax payments, you know, Southwestern's going to go, because, you know, we don't have the money. That's where we're getting the money from. But the rating agencies have given us a double A minus, which means we're investment quality.
Okay.
I think triple B or above. And remember when you did chapter 9 assignment, Ford is still triple B. You looked up Home Depot, you looked up Southwestern, and you looked up Ford. Ford is still triple B, but how long that's going to last, we don't know. It depends on how long and how severe the recession is, because car companies just get destroyed in a recession. They just get hammered, which is why, you know, Elon Musk is having a temper tantrum and wants his car company reopened, because the more they just sit there, the more money they're losing every day, millions of dollars a day they're losing in sales. Cool. Okay, how are we doing for time? Not bad. It's almost 8:30, so you guys are awesome. Any last questions? Because it's getting near my bedtime, folks. I've often thought of doing the office hour between 6:30 and 7:30, but I figure it's better later. But I'm old. I'm old. Okay, let's stop the share now and go back to the...
I have one question.
Okay.
When is the last day to turn in assignments?
Well, officially next Thursday. Turn in your assignments by next Thursday. You know, I will stick around for the weekend. I know some people are always, oh, my car had a baby. My sister needs a new transmission. You know, I got to go to Cancun because my uncle Tio Lucas is sick, whatever. But... but no, try to get him in by next Thursday. But you know me, I'm a softie. I'll definitely work with you. We have until, I think it's usually the Wednesday after the last day of finals. So we'll have until, let's see what it is. I'll look at you. You won't see this, but I'll see my calendar. That means we probably have until the 27th of May to turn in the grades. And then, of course, many faculty just say, no. I got a lot of grading to do. I'm fairly lucky because a lot of the grading is done via the Scantron, you know, multiple choice, true, false. And the calculations, although they take a lot of time to grade, especially people who don't do the worksheets, who aren't prepared, just sort of type whatever, they write whatever. But I'm usually done by the next Wednesday. So work with me. I'll work with you. Now, Viri asks, how many questions are on the final? Well, you've noticed that the exams usually have about 40 to 50 questions. Well, there's going to be more. Not a whole lot more. Plus, remember that all the questions about options, futures, shorting, buying on margin, real estate, gold, are sitting right there, right there. Let's go look at them. Where are we? Share the screen. Let's share the screen and then go back to here. Go back to the website. They're sitting right here, dear students. Here they are. Here are all the questions. Oh, no, wrong one. Right here. Here are all the questions on options and futures and margining and buying on margin, futures contracts. So just go through this and study it, because we want you to know that. Now, again, there's no calculations on options or shorting, none, all right? Here's a question on annuities. What's an annuity? Gold and precious metals are horrible investments. What's a real estate investment trust? So it's all in the presentations we did for the last 2 weeks. And then there'll be questions. So that I give you those questions. Now, the other questions are going to be about stocks and bonds and mutual funds and short-term investments. What can you reasonably expect from return from each? What is the risk? What are the risks involved? So this is stuff that you should really know by now. And, you know, again, the grade is, you know, it's not something that I like to talk about, because I want everybody to get an A, and of course everybody can't get an A, but I'll work with you. I'll definitely work with you. If you want more time on the exam, ask for it. If you want to take it over again, I'll let you take it over again. I don't know how many points I'll give you, but I like to think of the exam as a learning experience. And I try to make it that way. I try to reinforce the stuff that we learned. At the same time, we're supposed to tell the world, you know, this person knows what they're talking about, this person doesn't. And when you go out into the world and, you know, you say, I took Introduction to Investments and I know all about investments. And then you say money markets are dangerous, money markets are risky, I'm going to look bad. You understand? I'm going to look really bad. Or you say, you don't have to worry about stocks, always going to return 10, 12, 20%. I'm going to look bad, and we don't want that, right? Yeah, you do have to worry about stocks. But if you have a long-term perspective and don't panic, don't get too greedy, you should do very, very well. Cool. And okay, so let's go back and see if there's any other questions. How many questions? So there'll be, yeah. And you get, you know, I think you get like 2.5 hours. I give you plenty of time to do this, the true false. So you can bounce back and forth. Canvas tells me when you do that, by the way. Bounce back and forth between the PowerPoint presentations. Some people use Google. You can tell when they've gone to Investopedia, because Investopedia has their own iconic way of describing certain investments. And I can just say, they went to Investopedia and copied and pasted. It's like, all right, what are you going to do?
I move back and forth for the tables.
Well, yeah, you got to do that. What I remember in the face-to-face class, I did. Well, I think we got to chapter 6 before we went online. Maybe we didn't. Before we went on.
We got to chapter 6.
We got to chapter 6. But I would, in the face-to-face classes, I give you the tables. I make sure they're in your hot little hands when you're taking the exams. I want you to have them. I give you the formula sheets. So I want you can use those. And I think it makes sense to print those out before you take the exam. I think so. But I don't know. You want to look it up on the screen, you look up on the screen.
Yeah, I probably should. I just did. Oh, I just did look it up on the screen because it's what I had at the time.
I know, but I like having it in my hand. I like. I'm old, can I say? I'm old. All right. So that's okay. So any other questions? What's the width of an electron? I don't know.
I'm good.
Yeah. How do you make mayonnaise? Why is the sky blue? Because the sky is really sad. I love that question.
Are you still having the face-to-face class next week? I'm an online student, so.
No, there's no more face-to-face classes. However, if you contact me, Ursula, we can make an appointment and get together and go over the worksheets again. Is mayonnaise an investment? Sure, you know, what food companies make mayonnaise? we'll make another appointment. I'll be happy to work with you, Ursula. But there's no more classes. Now, the final will be available tomorrow, I think around 6 o'clock. I forget what I set it up for. In fact, I think I did set it up for 6, but I got to go look because I haven't launched it yet. I have to launch it. But if I don't do anything, it'll launch itself. I think. No, it won't. It's not been – I got to do it. And it will end on next Thursday. It ends next Thursday. But then, of course, you know there's somebody going to – Friday day is the last day of the semester. That's after Friday. We're realistic, you know, officially not supposed to take anything from the students, but I do, you know, over the weekend. But yeah, definitely contact me, because on Friday you get, oh, I'm sorry, my uncle had a toenail that had to be amputated and we had to fly to Cabo San Lucas to help him. Yeah, you're right. Okay.
Sure. What happened?
What?
Nothing.
No, of course, it's the best one was Chancho. Somebody sent me an email. Oh, I know you'll understand. We had to take, I'm going to miss the exam because we have to take Chancho up to Temecula to have his tail amputated. It was the dog. And I thought, oh, my Chancho. And I said to my wife, Anita, come here, look at this one. Look at this one. We laugh. We still talk about Chancho having to have his tail amputated up in Temecula. That's why he couldn't take the exam. So, yeah, I know, Chancho. So, like we really care what the name of the dog is, Chancho. But it's the funny thing is, probably was true. It's probably true. It's like, oh, this is horrible. The dog, it needs to be, have his tail amputated. But you don't know. You don't know. You get all kinds of things. A lot of grandmothers and grandparents die every semester. So,
wow.
Yeah. what I do is I say, oh, I know your sister had a baby, right? No, your car had a baby and your sister needs a new transmission. I got it. I understand. And then they look at you, they go, no. I said, no, don't worry about that. You're an adult. And the other, see, I'm pretty, don't tell this to other students, but I'm pretty relaxed. I let people get away with stuff. And the other professors look at me and they say, you're not teaching them responsibility. I said, don't worry. You know, the second or third time that they get fired from the job, they'll learn. They don't necessarily have to learn here in college. They can learn when they get fired two or three times. Okay.
Very true.
Oh yeah, it's true. I know it's true. Don't you know? I learned. Yeah. And So good. Okay. So now what else? All right. So if that's it, let's stop the recording, and. How do I stop? Where is it? Oh, pause here. Stop recording.